So we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 30, the activities of the projectors. Next one is more for you. Right. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Yeah.
In this verse, Vidura is dressed as Rajan, which means O King. In this regard, Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that Adhira never becomes angry because he is always situated in devotional service. Advanced devotees can control their senses. Therefore, a devotee can be addressed as Rajan. A king controls and rules in various ways among the citizens. Similarly, one who can control his senses is the king of his senses. He is a Swami or a Goswami. The Swamis and the Goswamis are therefore sometimes addressed as Maharaja or King. Same we see with Prithu Maharaj. Prithu Maharaj also became angry with the earth. Almost killed her. He was almost on the point of killing her. So there is his anger is being manifested by these big personalities. Prithu Maharaj is Shaktivesh avatar. But here it says that becomes 12 times hotter, isn't it? I think 12 times hotter. And everything is just burning and burning and burning. And everything is reduced to ashes, and the wind, or the water comes, and there's incessant rain. It rains like pillars. The rain is falling like pillars. And that washes everything. Then the wind comes and dries everything, starts to purify everything. Of the purifiers, I'm the wind, Krishna says. So, in this way, the universe is partially destroyed. There is a process in yoga. They use it in deity worship sometimes. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, if you cannot do it physically, you can meditate on doing it. But you meditate on Ram beach, right? The beach sound, Ram, Agni, fire. And this is for purifying your body. And you meditate on fire, and you pour the fire beach, and that purifies, burns all the impurities from the body. Then you meditate on the Ram Tam Vitam, Ram Vam Dram, I think the water, maybe I got it mixed up, water beach. And then he washes all the ashes away. Then you meditate on the Vayu beach. The wind comes and purifies everything. And then the Tam beach. Then you fill it with nectar. So first you purify everything. There is a Papurusha who lives in the stomach. His body is made of all different types of sins. His legs are this sin. He's killing a cow. He's, you know, each limb has a very sinful activity. So he stays in, is inside the stomach. So they burn this Papurusha. Then they put nectar, Amrit. They pour the nectar in. And so like they say, before they start their puja, so they get a pure body, so then they can serve the actual, they can serve the deity with a pure body. But first they bring the soul and the super soul to the top of the head. When they purified everything, they bring the soul and the super soul come back into the heart again. So a similar thing happens here at the end of the universe. It's, the whole thing is destroyed. It's described, actually, the universe as a big mess at the end of the day of Brahma, after all that ashes and water, and it's all, everything is, you know, like sometimes we have a big flood here, it leaves a big mess after that. So you get the water come up, it's all covered with black ashes, and then the Brahma's looking down, what a mess, I've got to start again. He starts a recreation again. Anyway, the idea is to purify everything. So this description is also given of in the fifth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, which can read, and Sukadeva Goswami is speaking. This is the glories of Lord Ananta from the fifth canto, chapter 25. this great universe, situated on one of Lord Ananta's thousands of hoods, appears just like a mustard seed, a white mustard seed. It is infinitesimal compared to Lord Ananta. At the time of devastation, when Lord Ananta desires to destroy the entire creation, he becomes slightly angry. And then from between his two eyebrows appears a three-eyed Rudra carrying a trident. This Rudra is also known as Shankarsana. He is the embodiment of the 11 Rudras, or incarnations of Lord Shiva. He appears in order to devastate the entire creation. Purport. In each creation, the living entities are given a chance to close their business as conditioned souls. When they misuse the opportunity and do not go back home back to Godhead, Lord Shankarsan becomes angry. The 11 Rudras, expansions of Lord Shiva, come out of Lord Shankarsan's eyebrows due to his angry mood, and all of them together devastate the entire creation. So these 11 Rudras, this is their business. So Lord Shiva has many forms. He expands as these Rudras. These Rudras specifically, they deal with the material energy, especially the tamasic side of it, destruction. So these Rudras take on this role of, there's many forms of Lord Shiva where he's a great Vaishnava, Vaishnava Tataha Shambhu, Sada Shiva. The only chant the glories of Lord, it's forms of Shiva, only chanting the glories of Gauranga, there's forms of the Lord chanting the glories of Shankarsan. So he has many different forms and many aspects, Lord Shiva. So, but specifically for the touching the material world and for tamagun, for destruction, etc., then these 11 Rudras come out. Of course, when he does all the tantric stuff and all the graveyard stuff and dancing ashes and all that, that's all tamasic. That 11 Rudras generally they do that. See, these 11 rivers, their leader is Nila Lohita, and they stay here in Nabadweep, actually on this island, Ritudweep. The Belpikor, you know Belpikoria, Sachimata's ancestral home. Just beyond that is a place called Rukunpur. And they stay there. I think the Bikram will be going there next year. We're sleeping out there instead of Belpikor, because they want to visit that place, also known as Shankarshan Ketra. But apparently these 11 rupas, they stay there. And here they're intoxicated with Garanga Prem. They're simply chanting and dancing Garanga Prem. They like it here. They don't have the business of destroying and touching all the tamasic stuff. They're simply dancing and chanting Garanga's names and with others. Lord Shankarshan. Lord Shankarshan is the ocean of unlimited spiritual qualities. Thus he is known as Ananta Dev. He is non-different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For the welfare of all living entities within the material world, he resides in his abode, restraining his anger and intolerance. Purport. Ananta Dev's main mission is to dissolve the material creation. But he checks his anger and intolerance. This material world is created to give the conditioned souls another chance to go back home, back to Godhead. But most of them do not take advantage of this facility. After the creation, they again exercise their old propensity for lording it over the material world. These activities of the conditioned soul anger Ananta Dev, and he desires to destroy the entire material world. Yet, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is kind toward us and checks his anger and intolerance. Only at a certain time does he express his anger and destroy the material world. So here, the material world was created to give the conditioned souls another chance to go back home, back to Godhead. But most of them do not take advantage of this facility. After creation, they again exercise their old propensity for lording it over the material world. So these activities, anger and unto death. Now we understand in the beginning of creation, before creation, the Lord is lying in Yoga Nidra. And he's Mahavishnu. He's lying in his mystic slumber, dreaming. And the personified Vedas all gather around him. And they're all chanting his glories. It's exactly like a king. The king, he has many poets and reciters. So in the morning they gather around his bedroom somewhere or outside or somewhere, anywhere you can hear them. And they chant his glories. Oh king, you are so great. You own 10,000 elephants. You've got so much land. You defeated this king. You defeated that king. You are so loved by your citizens. You protect. And he wakes up and he's feeling very good because he's hearing his glories chanted. The king, he likes that. So it's Vedic. This is the way they do it. This is the way they treat the king. So he wakes up feeling good and he knows his duty and how. So similarly, in the same way, they're awakening the Lord. He's in the mystic slumber. And they're telling him all of his wonderful potencies and glories. But they tell him of all your potencies and of all of your glories and qualities. There's one very special one, greater than all. That is, yes, your compassion. Your mercy. This is the greatest of all your qualities. So kindly wake up and show compassion on all the jivas who are sleeping within you. They're in a dormant stage. When Mahavishnu breathes, all the jivas, everything goes within. So they're all in like in a dormant stage. So he's feeling some compassion. In third canto you will find. The Lord feels something was lacking. Something is lacking in God. It's right there in the Bhagavatam. Something was lacking. He's lying in Yoga Nidra. This is mystic sleep, Prabhupada, Brahmabhuta Prashanatma, completely self-satisfied. Yet he felt something lacking, it says. So what was that lacking? Now all these jivas, they're all my past and parcels. I expanded as them to engage in pleasure. But they've forgotten the duty, and now they're all bound up in this material world, taking birth and death again. They're all my children. I can't tolerate to see that. So out of compassion, the Lord agrees to wake up and sets the whole universe rolling again, so living entities can come out again, take human births, and understand their relationship with the Lord, and go back home, back to Godhead. That's the whole plan of the universe. But you see here, some of them, they go back to their old ways again. How many billions of times they've done it? Being breathed out by Mahavishnu, spent universal lifetimes, and again forgotten what they're supposed to be doing. So because of this, Sananda becomes angry. They're stupid living entities there. They're stupid, you know, they got so much facility. They're supposed to be for the Lord's pleasure, and they're simply trying to enjoy this material creation. They're so stupid. Let me destroy them. He gets angry at the stupidity of the living entities, which is quite fitting the Lord. He should. We are so stupid. So he has to do something a bit drastic, like destroy the whole universe. So anyway, this is why the Lord is creating an island. The main reason, one of the main reasons, is for the living entities who have forgotten their situation. So, by his glance, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enables the modes of material nature to act as the causes of universal creation, maintenance, and destruction. The Supreme Soul is unlimited and beginningless. And although he is one, he has manifested himself in many forms. How can human society understand the ways of the Supreme? Now here, Prabhupada is quoting from Chaitanya Bhagavata, which is chanting the glories of Lord Ananta. I'll read the translations. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras, Sanakshana, Sananta, and Sanat Kumar, Vyasudev, Shukadev, and Narad are all pure devotees, eternal servants of the Lord. Lord Sri Ananta is worshipped by all the uncontaminated devotees mentioned above. He has thousands of hoods and is a reservoir of all devotional service. Lord Ananta is the original person and the great mystic controller. At the same time, he is a servant of God, a Vaishnava. Since there is no end to his glories, no one can understand him fully. I have already spoken to you of his service to the Lord. Now hear how the self-sufficient Anantadev exists in the lower planetary systems of Patala. Bearing his stringed instrument, the tambura, on his shoulders, the great sage Narad Muni always glorifies Lord Ananta. Narad Muni has composed many transcendental verses in praise of the Lord. Simply due to the glance of Lord Ananta, the three modes of material nature interact and produce creation, maintenance, and annihilation. These modes of nature appear again and again. The Lord is glorified as one without a second, and the Supreme Truth, who has no beginning, and therefore is called Anantadev, unlimited. Who can understand him? His form is completely spiritual, and he manifests it only by his mercy. All the activities in this material world are conducted only in his form. He is very powerful and is always prepared to please his personal associates and devotees. If we simply try to engage in the congregational chanting the glories of Lord Ananta, the dirty things in our hearts accumulated during many births will immediately be washed away. And therefore a Vaishnava never loses an opportunity to glorify Anantadev. Lord Anantadev is known as the Shesha, the unlimited end, because he ends our passage through the material world. Simply by chanting his glories, everyone can become liberated. On his head and under Dave sustains the entire universe with its millions of planets, containing enormous oceans and mountains. He is so large and powerful that this universe rests on one of his hoods, just like a drop of water, and he doesn't know where it is. While bearing the universe on one of his hoods, Anantadev chants the glories of Krishna with each of his thousands of mouths. Although he's been chanting the glories of Lord Krishna since time immemorial, he has still not come to their end. To this very day, Lord Ananta continues to chant the glories of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and still he finds no end in them. In the Navadita Mahapiyam from Ankhan, Lord Ananta, he goes to see Lord Narayan in Vaikuntha, and he praises the Lord by chanting many prayers, Purusha Shukta. And he said, my Lord, you explained to me many, many truths, you revealed many, many of your eternal forms to me. I would like to understand about Radha and Krishna. Lord Narayan said, Anantadev, what are you asking? It's like saying catch hold of a tail of a dog to cross the ocean. You're asking this question. You're a snake. You're a snake king. You're so unintelligent. And you're asking how we can understand Radha and Krishna. Lord Brahma, he takes hundreds of years meditation to begin to understand. Even I cannot fully understand. How is it you're asking this question? Depart, I can understand. You must be a very great devotee, because only devotees, great devotees, will ask this question. So, he gives him lots of advice. And he says you should go to Navadvip, take birth there. Very soon that the Lord will be appearing in his most incarnations, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he says also at that time, you will take birth in those pastimes, and you'll be known as the large-bodied Nityananda, Nityananda Prabhu Ki. Okay. So, actually, this is our, if you're from South India especially, you can preach to the Ramanuja Sampradaya. There are thousands and thousands, millions of followers actually. But they're following the orders of Ramanuja, he's their guru. So you can preach to them. This is the later incarnation of Ramanuja. He appeared several hundred years ago. He's preaching to Dasaras, Lakshmi Narayan, to worship the Lord. But in his latest incarnation, in Gaurlila as Nityananda Prabhu, he's giving Radha and Krishna prem, Goloka prem, by chanting the holy names of Krishna. So if you're actually followers of Ramanuja, then you'll want to follow his latest incarnation, fulfill his latest desire, practical. Also, in the when in the churning of the ocean to get nectar, the first thing that came out was all that poison. So there's an ocean of poison. That's a lot of poison. Lord Shiva, he drank that. He kept it in his throat. But he didn't die. Nobody else can drink an ocean of poison and not die. So how do you counteract poison? What is the antidote to counteract poison? What? Oh, yes, you can also apply more poison. It'll fight with the other poison, but I think when you drink an ocean, maybe another ocean wouldn't be so good. Huh? Yes. Lord Shiva, he went to see Anantadev. He generally resides on Shwetadvip. And Anantadev taught him the Ananta Samhita, which is glorification of Navadvipa Dham, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and the pastimes and everything. So Lord Shiva heard this, the glories of Navadvipa and Gauranga, and he kept it in his throat. So that counteracted all that poison by nectar, the nectar of Navadvipa Dham. He can even counteract the notion of poison. We're fortunate to be here. Anantadev ki jai. So here the Pachetas, they want to burn all the trees. They're angry because it's interfering with their service. They've been instructed to rule the world, rule the citizens. But what can they do? The trees have grown everywhere, so because it interferes with their service, they become angry. Although in the purport it's talking about becoming dhira. The devotees are great dhiras, self-control. But here we see that the anger is coming when it interferes with devotional service to the Lord. Prithu Maharaj was angry because it interfered with his service to the Lord by or maintaining all the citizens. Prabhupada even became angry. We heard some stories yesterday of Prabhupada's anger. There was another incident in Delhi, 1972. We had a big panel program there. And there was thousands of people there. And Prabhupada was in a lecture there, right? In Cornwall Circus in the center part of Delhi. And he was giving a lecture on Bhagavad Gita, talking about submission, how Arjuna was submissive to Krishna. Then you can actually understand what is Bhagavad Gita. So he's giving his lecture, then there's some hippie jumped up with wild hair, and he was saying, "Does anybody here know the self? In the self, by the self." Prabhupada said, "Yes." Well, he said, and Prabhupada brought him up on the stage. He said, and he gave him a mic also. And so then he started saying, so what was his question? Something about when was the Bhagavad Gita written? Such and such Swami says it was written. You said it was 5,000 years ago. It was written down. And such Swami says, the Prabhupada said, no, let me ask you a question. What authority are you speaking from? And they go, no, I ask first. You answer my question. No, you answer mine. And they started getting the big argument. It got fierce. And there's about 10,000 people watching it. And Prabhupada was getting angry, and he had a false tooth. He had to show a gold tooth. It was kind of falling down. He was so angry with the false tooth. And everyone was completely shocked, you know. The Swami getting angry, you know, the general conception of a Swamiji. And he's getting angry. And Malati Mataji was there with the women, lady life members who they were with. And they turned to her and they said, "You know, Swamiji, he shouldn't become angry." She went, "Shut up!" Prabhupada can become angry if he wants. So that added to the that added to the rajasic mood there. But anyway, everything got, you know, like a big turmoil was going on. A lot of people got up and left. They all left, and not everyone, but at least a lot stayed. But some devotees were saying afterwards, It was like a point Prabhupada was making. That was the point of his class, was you've got to accept authority. They said that, you know, probably that's why he called him up, gave him a microphone, and because he was claiming, he wasn't quoting any authority. So you have to accept the authority. So it was like a lesson that Prabhupada showed them. There's another, you've seen that video clip of Prabhupada, he's talking to, what's his name, Cardinal Daniel, is it? Cardinal Daniel. Where was that, in France? So Prabhupada was talking, about killing cows. If you're killing cows, you're not going to even begin religion. As long as you're sinful, you know. So Prabhupada talked to him, and he asked him, "Do you think it's okay to kill cows?" And this Daniel, Cardinal Daniel, he was a Frenchman. "Well, if their children are hungry and there are these cows, they are wandering in the street, I think it would be okay to kill them. It's for..." And Prabhupada's sitting there, you can see he's getting really angry. He controlled it. He didn't completely lose it. But you see Prabhupada's agitated and he moves. And, here is one of the leaders of one of the biggest religions in the world. And he's saying, "No, I think it's okay to kill the cows." And Prabhupada's really, you can see he's almost shaking. But he patiently... "You think that cow killing is sinful?" Prabhupada said, "Yes." He kind of shut up. There's another time, Umapati Prabhu was telling me, that right in the early days, and they didn't have any, this Gita wasn't out, they had another Gita, the Mayavad Gita, because everything was Mayavad Gita. There was no devotee Gita's back at that time. But we had access to Vishwanath, Chakravarti, Thakur, Baladev. Nobody really knew much about it. Anyway, so he had a Mayavadi Gita, someone. And he asked one of his first disciples, you read it. So he read a little bit. And he said, "So you can explain it?" And he said, "Yes." And he just started preaching hard on Mayavad philosophy. Because they're all quite new, the devotees. And Mupati said, Prabhupada said, he was getting redder and redder and redder. And Prabhupada said, "Have you finished?" And he said, "No, I haven't finished." Whoa, and then he started preaching more and more by Mayavad philosophy, and Prabhupada was coming bright red. He said, "Have you finished it?" But Prabhupada, because he asked him to say it, he didn't cut him off or anything. He had the etiquette to let him speak it out. He said, Prabhupada, furious, he was so red. So you see, these incidents, anything that interferes with service to the Lord or the Lord's program, then the devotees do become angry. So, well, where does anger come from? Comes from karma. Karma, krodha, lobha. It's a progression. First karma is there, lust is there, then anger. Karma, krodha, lobha, then greed, I must have it. Then you fall down, you go right down in an illusion. So, the anger is coming from karma. If you find yourself being angry, you think about it, you probably, it's coming from some lust, something you were lusting over, and then you couldn't get it. It said that Vishwanatha Chakravarti gives an example. Lust, he said. He said, you see a beautiful woman. Lust. Then someone comes along and stands in between your vision and the woman. that you were enjoying. And then you become angry. So this is how anger is working. But if you can't fulfill your lust, you become angry. And then you become greedy. I must do it. And you get so into it, you become illusioned. So lust is arising from the mode of passion. And lust in the mode of passion creates krodha in the mode of ignorance. It creates anger in the mode of ignorance. It's the chemical breakdown of the universe how it works. So lust and passion creates anger in tamagun, ignorance. So then, as Krishna says, it becomes the greatest, the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. One has to learn to control this lust. And also in the fifth canto, so Lord Rishabhadeva speaking, it's Shukadeva's son, but it's the chapter is the activities of Lord Rishabhadeva. Chapter 6, text 5. And he says, the mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage in fruitive activities. What learned man would put faith in the mind? So Shukadeva says, after capturing an animal or animals, a cunning hunter does not put faith in them, for they might run away again. Similarly, those who are advanced in spiritual life do not put faith in the mind. Instead, they always remain vigilant and watch the mind's action. All the learned scholars have given their opinion. The mind by nature is very restless, and one should not make friends with it. If we place full confidence in the mind, it may cheat us at any moment. Lord Shiva became agitated upon seeing Mohini, who was the form of Krishna, and Subhari Muni fell down from the mature stage of yogic perfection. An unchaste woman is very easily carried away by paramas, and it sometimes happens that her husband is violently killed by her paramas. If the yogi gives his mind a chance and does not restrain it, his mind will give facility to enemies like lust, anger, and greed, and they will doubtlessly kill the yogi. In the purport, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that in the morning, our first business should be beat the mind with shoes 100 times. And before going to bed, beat the mind 100 times with a broomstick. In this way, one's mind can be kept under control. An uncontrolled mind and an unchaste wife are the same. An unchaste wife can kill her husband at any time. An uncontrolled mind, followed by lust, anger, greed, madness, envy, and illusion, can certainly kill the yogi. When the yogi is controlled by the mind, he falls down into material condition. One should be very careful of the mind, just as a husband should be careful of an unchaste woman. The mind is the root cause of lust, anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. Combined, these constitute bondage to fruitive activities. What learned man would put faith in the mind? The mind is the original cause of material bondage. It is followed by many enemies, such as anger, pride, greed, lamentation, illusion, and fear. The best way to control the mind is to engage it always in Krishna consciousness. Shavai mana Krishna paravavindai. Since the followers of the mind bring about material bondage, we should be very careful not to trust the mind. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Hare. Any comment, question? Kandagama?
I had a question about the devastation on the Earth planet. When the Pachetas came out of the water, they saw these trees. The trees had, you know, just taken over. So apparently everything was a big jungle and there was no place to grow grains. The question I have is, how are people living? I have a vision of chock-a-block trees, one big tree every square meter or something. It's like, how is it possible to, live?
It says there was no agriculture. I don't know how they were living.
Roots and fruits, or what?
Aborigines and rainforests.
Yeah, Aborigines and rainforests. Yeah, how are they living in Prithu's time? They were actually complaining, the earth is not giving grains. They were also, somehow or another, they were living. But it said the trees looked so big it was covering the sky. It looked like there was a takeover Swargaloka or something. There was a report that if it was left unchecked, New York City, within, was it less than 100 years, maybe someone knows the statistic, it would be finished. The trees, the vegetation would be, like here you get some trees, banyan trees are growing out the wall. If you leave it, it crashes all the wall down. So it wasn't very much time, less than 100 years, I think. New York would be, the trees would grow and they'll take over and the buildings in a very short time. But as mentioned in Purple yesterday, which is not very acceptable according to today's politically correct statement, Prabhupada said the rainforests are not the cause of, the trees are not the cause of rainforests. Well, it's a big thing now, isn't it? I don't know, it used to be, I guess it still is. Talking about the rainforest, the Brazilian rainforest, they're chopping down the trees and the rain, that was attracting the rain, and big thing. That I remember they had a meeting here, they had a meeting in Calcutta, it was science and religion, remember that? And all the scientists were there, and they came here also afterwards. They were giving lectures, but most of them were really sentimental, but they were more or less indicating the same thing, grow a tree, plant flowers and grow trees, and look after the environment, and talking about, which is more or less environment friendly people. But it's a big thing, this that whole rainforest thing. Prabhupada said, it's not a fact. It's not a fact. But he said, because the proof is it rains on the ocean. There's no big trees there holding the clouds or anything over it. There's no tree. There's the proof, he said, it grows on the ocean. And he said, anyway, according to Shastra, the rains come from Jagannath, not caused by rain trees.
I think the scientists are saying that the rainforests are like the lungs.
Like the lungs.
Lungs of the planet. They're not, I had never heard that they were causing the rain. I just heard that they're causing the oxygen, But that's why they're lamenting that there's not going to be enough oxygen because they're destroying all the trees. Question? What?
Oh, please, sorry, I didn't see you.
It's a short comment. I obviously they can move their fruits and trees, but I suspect the reason why the Pachetas were disturbed is because there's no grains, because grains are required for sacrifice, which is a yuga dharma at that time.
speak it loudly, please.
That the potatoes, obviously everyone could live by the fruits of the trees. People were living, but why were they angry? Because there was no grains, but grains are required for sacrifice. So they were. It says in one of the verses, too, that the trees seemed like they were covering the pathway to the heavenly planets. What does that mean? It means also because the people, there was no grains growing, so they couldn't do sacrifice to go to the heavenly planets.
According to the Pashetas, they got angry and burned the trees. And you mentioned that in devotional service, whatever stands in between our service to Krishna, the devotee can be angry. So if I can get angry on someone who is trying to disturb me and beat him up, how do I get that anger? How do I manifest the anger on a devotee who is trying to obstruct my service to Krishna? The Pakitas, they kill the trees, they burn the trees. But in human life, if a devotee is disturbing me, my service to Krishna, how do I manifest the anger? Do I fight him or do I do what?
Okay. How do I manifest the anger? If someone's interfering with my service to Krishna, how do I manifest the anger? Srila Prabhupada was asked that supposing somebody comes and insults you, what should you do? Prabhupada said you should tolerate it. And they said, suppose you know, they become very heavy. You should still tolerate. Suppose they actually physically they start to beat you. That you still tolerate. And then another devotee said, suppose when you see another devotee being beaten, he said, then you be like fire. If you see, what happens if you see another devotee being beaten? Prabhupada said, then you become like fire. In other words, for yourself, you should be tolerant. But for others, no. You should be angry.
If somebody is disturbing your service and I get angry at him or her, people used to misunderstand the anger. They may ask you, what do you have in common with that person? Why are you defending him or her? They won't think that you are getting angry because he is offending anybody. They will see it in the light of you having a special relationship with that person. That's why you are trying to defend the person. My question. Somebody disturb you. I get angry at him. So they want to know what I have in common with you. Not even the offense they are trying to disturb yourself. So it's a bit complicated to get angry towards somebody who is disturbing anybody. Because the general mode is, what interest do you have to defend someone? They don't see the offense that the person is committing. So sometimes it's like to me, it's better to fight it out and end it once and for all. Just to fight.
You can go to an higher authority and discuss with him. Yeah, yes. If you think it's wrong what he's doing, he may be right. You may be wrong also. So better that you both go to an authority. This is a situation. Can you please give us a conclusion?
What constitutes an authority?
Huh?
Is it managerial authority or spiritual authority? Because I don't understand. Authority might not have a good sadhana. So what is your candidate?
Right. No, authority is someone's in a position of authority. You follow him anyway. You don't disrespect the etiquette of following authority, because if you disrespect your authority, then everything breaks down. The whole of the Vedic system is based on acceptance of authority. The moment you don't accept authority, then everything will break down.
Okay, in our sadhana practice, It's about spiritual life. So the authority of my spiritual life, should it depend on spiritual authority or managerial material authority? Who decides how I practice my spiritual life? Is it someone who is spiritually advanced or someone who is just a manager? We are devotees. It's a spiritual movement. So when you talk about authority, if my sadhana is being disturbed and the person who is my authority is not spiritually good, how can he help me in my spiritual life?
You were talking about if the service is stopped, then the spiritual authority will give you another one. If he stopped it, then he should replace it with another one. But you shouldn't disrespect the principle of authority because we don't agree with it or something like that. There's an example in Guru Das and Jamuna. They were looking after the construction of Krishna Balaram Temple. The president, I don't know who the president was, but anyway, he was doing something wrong, so Guru Das told Srila Prabhupada, we'll rectify. Otherwise, you'll end up quarreling and no service will be done. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Prabhupada ki jai. Srimad Veda Bhaktivedanta ki jai. Jai Govinda.